Wait, is there such a thing as mental health? Or not? A heck of a question to ask, I realize, on this mental health podcast. But stay with me. There's this school of thought that says that by focusing on mental health and physical health as separate things, we risk ignoring the connection that they have with each other, how each informs the other. Like, if you have chronic pain from a physical ailment, that pain is going to have an effect on your mental state, could put you into a depression. And if that's the case, you don't really have two healths, physical and mental. You have one health, and your health has a problem. Similarly, a whole bunch of different mental health conditions can lead to, say, a lack of sleep, which can be felt physically all over the body. So is that a mental health problem or physical health problem? Well, it's just a health problem. So the thinking goes that there is only health. Physical and mental are part of health, are part of each other. After all, if a brain is separated from a body, the individual who owns the brain and the body does not tend to thrive. Okay, this is not the kind of introduction you would ordinarily provide for an interview with a comedian, but this is not an ordinary show. It's Depression Mode. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here. Sasheer Zamata is an actor and stand-up comedian. She may be best known for her several seasons as a cast member on Saturday Night Live. Sasheer has been a regular on the shows Woke and Home Economics, and she's appeared in several films. She has a new stand-up special coming out next month entitled The First Woman. Here's a little preview.
We wanted to go dancing one night, so we went to the concierge desk and we're like, we're going to go dancing. Can you please call us a car? And we were talking to a staff full of men, and they were like, you want to go out alone? You're just two women. Do you need a man to go with you? Should we send a chaperone to watch over you? And we're like, we're not going to prom. We're just going to a bar, it's fine. But they wouldn't let it go. And then one guy behind the desk was like, I mean, I guess you have to learn your lessons the hard way. And I was like, is this the beginning of a porn? Learned my lessons the hard way. I mean, I wasn't expecting this, but okay.
Sasheer Zamata, welcome to Depression Mode.
Yes, thank you for having me.
I love the new special. It's a wonderful special. I was watching it and I wrote just down in my notes, I wrote one word, anxiety. There seems to be some anxiety in the material and in your day-to-day life.
Yeah, absolutely. Before I shot this special, I was kind of on a journey trying to analyze my health a little bit more. Like I talk about it in the show. I was having these heart palpitations, and I had them in college. And I remember like going to the student health center and asking if someone could analyze me. And they like did all these scans, and I had to wear a heart monitor. And they're kind of just like, oh, you have an irregular heartbeat, but nothing to worry about. So I did have that for years. And then in the last couple years, it was increasing in frequency, how irregular these heartbeats would be, and also like how intense they would be. And so I was like, I should probably check this out again. And then I went to a bunch of UCLA doctors and heart specialists and whatnot, had to wear a different heart monitor, which was like nice to see the advancement in the science. The one I wore before
was a little more streamlined. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I could just tape it to my chest. The one I had before, I had like wear in my pocket, like it was like a mic pack, and like had all these wires and tubes attached to my chest. This was just like a cute little heart monitor that was just like nice, taped under my shirt. The heart monitor was supposed to pick up the irregularity, but I was also supposed to tap on it whenever I felt an irregularity. And then the doctor analyzed it and was like, okay, so the heart monitor didn't really pick anything up, but you tapped on the monitor like 8 to 10 times a day. And I was like, well, who's right? I'm going off of what I felt. I mean, thankfully, they said there was nothing wrong with my heart. There's nothing like physically wrong with me. And she was like, I believe there's something going on like anxiety-wise. I think this is maybe an anxious reaction that your body's having to whatever is going on, which I wasn't surprised. I think I was like surprised. I was like, oh, I didn't realize I was that anxious, or I didn't realize that I was feeling this so frequently. But then it's one of those things where you like flash back and you're like, oh, I guess I was feeling like a little stressed at that moment, or something I was thinking of made me tense and then my heart started racing, but I didn't think that those things were connected. And yeah.
Was it like an atrial fibrillation, I think they call it, where it's like you're just missing a beat, or it's like a drummer screwing up or something?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, instead of just like a steady heartbeat, it's I'm doing like a double time step right. with my heart. Thankfully, it's like operating just fine. It's just having a little hiccups here and there.
It always is nice to hear from a doctor. There's nothing wrong with you physically.
Yes.
Such a great leading statement of when you get to the next thing. So what did it feel like when you were hitting the monitor, and what was the sensation that caused you to hit it?
I would just be kind of doing whatever I did during the day, doing the dishes, doing whatever. And then all of a sudden my heart would skip a beat and I'd be like, oh, there it is. And I would mark it. So I think it's like a delayed thing, because it's never like I'm so stressed or anxious and that's when it's happening, because I feel like I would have been able to track that better. It's right. truly like randomly, like I'm driving, I'm talking to someone, I've been in mid-conversation where it's happened, and I'm like, this doesn't feel like it's related to what's happening currently. So right. it could just be a delayed reaction to what happened before that, or me thinking about something in the future, which is anxiety.
It sounds a little bit like Family Feud or Jeopardy, like you're buzzing in when you know the right answer or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have trigger finger.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, did you agree with that assessment that it's coming from anxiety?
Yeah, I do agree. Because I didn't feel like it was anything health-wise, like physically. Like I also was like, yeah, it doesn't make sense because everything else feels like it's operating just fine. And then once we kind of put a name to it, when it did happen, I would have moments of being like, oh, I'm feeling anxious about something. And it would kind of calm down. And honestly, the frequency of how many times my heart palpitates has decreased immensely since I have acknowledge the anxiety. So I think it's kind of like naming it helped a lot.
How far back do you go with anxiety?
I mean, it's funny. I don't know. Because I had these palpitations were starting in college, but I didn't know that's what that was at the time. And then I know I had my first big panic attack in like 2007 or something like that. Because I was working at Disney World and
in Orlando,
and I was a character performer, and I was friends with, that's what you're supposed to say, you're friends with Pluto, Eeyore, Mrs. Incredible, and I was also barely in the height range for the Buzz Lightyear costume, and they do everything by height. I'm 5'6.5", and so Buzz Lightyear's in like the 5'7" to 5'9" range, and they're like, so you technically fit, but like I felt too small. Like the chest pack was so huge, I could barely touch one hand to another hand. The face was too close to my face. It was like all wrong. And I remember arguing with my manager before I got out in front of the kids, and they're like, everyone hates this costume. You're just trying to get out of it. And I was like, that should be a sign. Like if everyone yeah, hates
everybody
it,
hates this costume.
We should get rid of the costume. And so I was sobbing in this costume in front of the kids, just like lackadaisically stamping my signature onto their little books. And then my character attendant, who's like the eyes and ears of the character, saw how upset I was and was like, hey, Buzz, how are you doing? Thumbs up, thumbs down. I gave a big thumbs down. And they're like, okay, we got to get you off stage. So they tried to usher me off stage, but then Woody was like hamming it up in front of the door with some kid, and then I guess I don't know, my body reacted and my lungs just stopped working, and I like started hyperventilating. You could hear it outside my costume, and they just like picked me up and rushed me backstage and took off my costume. And they're like, "We think you had a panic attack," and I hadn't had one at this point, so I didn't know what that even entailed. And they took me to the medic, and they finally were like, "We realize now you probably shouldn't wear that costume." And I was like, "Oh, good. Oh, good. Glad my body had to break down for that to be the result." But then I remember reading about panic attacks years later and seeing that it wasn't just those types of physical reactions. Sometimes it's just like, you know, the tingling of your tongue or your, or like your numbness in your fingers or little things like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I've been having a lot of little panic attacks for a while. And I don't even know when that started, but I can think of many instances where I'm like on the subway and my tongue is like tingling for some reason, or like my fingers are getting numb or my breath is getting shortened or something. And I didn't know what it was. I'm just like, oh, what a weird thing. But then realized, yeah. Oh, I've been having panic attacks.
Well, I think a lot of people who haven't experienced them think that it's a purely psychological phenomenon. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm having a panic attack is sort of shorthand that a lot of people use for I'm feeling stressed, when it's not really that at all. Do you feel emotional stress for these things too, or is it mostly just a physical sensation?
I think it depends. Could be both. The last big panic attack I had was at work. I was on set and I was closing out my house and like just stressed in general and trying to like send all this paperwork while I was on set, and there was like smoke in the air. So I think there was like many factors adding to this. And so I was starting to get a headache and then like standing outside to get air. And then a PA came up to me and was like, "Oh, we're ready when you are." And that stressed me out. Like the fact that the crew was waiting for me. Right. Right. Made me anxious, and then I had a panic attack. And it was like a migraine into a panic attack, and it was like a full, like, I was out of commission, and they actually had to shut down after that because we were like, we can't continue. Like, I was and thankfully the director also suffered from migraines and was like, "I understand that, like, once you have one, you cannot continue, you got to go home." Yeah. So yeah, the medic on set was like, we're done. We gotta call it.
Coming up, more with Sashir Zameda on panic, migraines, and how that all works out as a cast member on Saturday Night Live. If you want to start a business and make your product or service available to everyone around the world, well, you can do that. Because internet and websites, I bet you've heard of websites. The internet is full of websites. How am I going to build a website, though, you think? I'm not a dang web designer. I'm not a dang web developer. I'm no dang webmaster. Well, good news, I'm here to tell you that you are a dang all those things. You can build a website, an e-commerce store, a web presence, and it's not that hard thanks to Squarespace. I did it. So therefore, you can do it too. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. They have this new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, where you can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. You can accept credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay. You can upload video content, organize your video library, showcase your content on beautiful video pages. You can even add a paywall and sell access to your video library. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/depresh to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hi everyone, I'm Laura House.
And I'm Annabelle Gurwitch, and sometimes it feels like the whole world is a dumpster fire.
Right? There's too much to worry about.
That's why we make Tiny Victories. It's a 15-minute podcast where we celebrate our minor accomplishments and fleeting joys.
And listeners call in, like Valerie, who found the perfect gift for her daughter's boyfriend, and Adam, who finally turned his couch cushion the right way.
And little happinesses, like how birdsong helps your brain.
That's science. So join us in Not Freaking Out for 15 minutes a week.
That's Tiny Victories with Annabelle and Laura, Mondays on Maximum Fun.
Whew, it's a tiny victory just to make a network promo.
Honestly.
Back with Sasheer Zamata, actor, comedian, erstwhile Buzz Lightyear performer, panic attack haver, and as we've learned, migraineur. That's a person who gets migraines. How long have migraines been an issue?
That's also a new development. I would say that probably started in the last couple years. And I haven't had many, but when I do, it's bad. It's very bad. Yeah, I haven't had so many or had them so intensely that I've had to like get medication or anything like that. But I have definitely had them and can feel when they start coming on. So I start trying to like leave whatever situation I'm in to like be in a dark room or like rest for a minute. So hopefully I can catch it.
Yeah. God, migraines and panic attacks at the same time. That sounds awful.
Yeah, I think that was the one and only time it happened. And I think after that, I was also like, I gotta take care of myself. I can't afford to be doing this, especially at work. And so I started doing transcendental meditation, and that's been helping a lot. I don't do it often. I don't do it all the time as much as I should, but just like knowing that I can rest at any time of the day is very helpful, because I think I would usually just push it off to the side, like I'll get to that later. I'll like meditate before I go to bed or something like that, as opposed to like, you have 20 minutes, just do it now. Like, stop checking your email, go close your eyes for 20 minutes.
How did you get involved in that kind of meditation? Like, what did you do to learn those skills?
I think there's actually a lot of actors and like people in the industry who do TM. So I think I've heard about it for a while. I actually think I first heard about it at SNL when I was there, because I remember Colin Jost and Vanessa Bayer were doing it, and I was like, what is this woo-woo shit they're talking about? But also, they seemed pretty calm in a very stressful environment, so I was like, something's happening. And then, yeah, I think I was looking up different types of meditation, and I ran across it again, and I was like, oh yeah, I think I know people who do that. And I did like a few workshops, and felt like it was helping and felt good. And I it was kind of like an undeniable physical change I was going through after I did it each time. So I was like, okay, I can't like deny that there's something going on here. Like, my body feels better. My breath work is better. I sleep better. I dream more. Like, it was all just, all the things were working well whenever I would do TM. So I try to keep doing it.
Is it something you could do during a panic attack to kind of slow things down and reverse course a little?
I don't know if I can fully meditate during a panic attack, but I do try to like focus on my breathing. And then what I've been told for my panic attacks is to like look around. So I feel like for when I meditate, I close my eyes. But when I'm having a panic attack, it's actually good to look at your surroundings and know where you are. So like being like lamp, table, shoelace, like just kind of like clocking what's around you. And I honestly don't know what the science is behind that, but it has helped me when I'm actually in a panic attack to kind of like move your head and look in different directions to figure out where you are in the world, because maybe the panic is also like, I don't know what's happening. So if you have some sort of solid ground to touch down on, or like some sort of knowledge of like, I at least know this. I don't know what's happening, but I know that there's a lamp in front of me. I know that this man's in front of me. I know this is happening. That can like kind of calm you.
I have been, I guess, fortunate to have only had a couple, three panic attacks ever. But I remember the first one I got, my wife and I were moving our family from the West Coast, from Seattle to Minnesota. And I was in the middle of, I was doing journalism. I was reporting a story. I was planning this move. We were pregnant with kid number three, and it all kind of came upon me. And I had this sense of like, I think I'm about to die. Yeah. Like I called my wife and I said, bad news. I think I'm about to die.
Really
bad timing. I know we're moving and having a baby, but I'm going to die. With your panic attacks, do you get that sense of mortality? Because I've heard about it from other people as well. Like there's a sense of doom that kind of comes over you.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever been like, I'm going to die in this moment, but I have felt like something's really wrong with me and I got to get this checked out. Or like, I have a big like health problem that I'm unaware of and it's going to affect me for the rest of my life. So right. I need to like figure this out, which is why I also went to the doctor as much as I did to try to figure out what was happening with my heart. But yeah, I don't think I've ever been like, this is the moment I'm going to die. This is the end. I had a good run.
Yeah.
Honestly, I had that moment, that feeling whenever I'm in a plane. Whenever there's turbulence, I'm like, this is it. And you know what? If this is it, I had a good run.
Yeah.
I did what I could.
Has that always been the case with flying?
I feel like it increased as I got older. Like I've been flying by myself since I was 11 because my parents split and that they would put me on a plane and I would go visit my dad for the summers. So I was very comfortable on planes when I was a child, but then something about my adulthood, I'm not sure what changed, but I just started freaking out whenever there's turbulence and I like white knuckle it. And then I look around at people just like on their phones and I'm like, how are you not freaking out right now?
Right. I always look to the flight attendants. Like,
yeah.
You know, if I see a panicked flight attendant, and I never have, but if I do, then it's all over, I think.
That's true. That's a good litmus.
So you're a person who has dealt with anxiety to some level and has dealt with panic attacks. I can't imagine the kind of pressure that a job like SNL entails. Were all these things spiking a lot more when you were in that pressure cooker?
Yeah. Probably. I actually don't remember having any panic attacks then, but also I probably did and didn't know it.
Just another day at the office in a place like that.
Yeah, where everyone's panicking. Yeah, yeah. It's a stressful environment and everyone's dealing with stress in their own way. But it is funny. I feel like by the end of my fourth season there, I had reached a place of zen, like a kind of a, well, it is what it is kind of feeling. Because I think I could take solace in the fact that no one really knew what was happening. There were some people who knew what was happening, but it's not like there was a formula or a game you could play to like fully crack the code of how to do well on this show. You just did well or you didn't, and it varied from week to week. And so I think eventually I realized, there's nothing specific I can do to change what's happening. I could just do me and try my best, and that's that. And also understand that other people are so involved with their own shit and like so stressed in their own right. They're not worried about me. They're not like, I'm not being iced out this week or no one's like attacking me this week because they're stressed about their own sketch. So
right.
I guess eventually I was like, there was like a, I don't want to say dead end, but like a kind of a acceptance of this is what it is. And all I can do is stay afloat.
Coming up, Sashir gets a little help in that effort to stay afloat.
Are you tired of being picked on for only wanting to talk about your cat at parties?
Do you feel as though your friends don't understand the depth of love you have for your guinea pig?
When you look around a room of people, do you wonder if they know sloths only have to eat one leaf a month?
Have you ever dumped someone for saying they're just not an animal person?
Us too.
She's Alexis B. Preston.
She's Ella McLeod.
And we host Comfort Creatures, the show where you can't talk about your pets too much, animal trivia is our love language, and dragons are just as real as dinosaurs.
Tune in to Comfort Creatures every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Back with actor and comedian Sashir Zameida. She's got a new comedy special called The First Woman coming out next month. We've been talking about a place of relative calm that she reached during her time at the very stressful Saturday Night Live. where she realized all she could do was stay afloat. That's very wise and that's very healthy. How did you arrive at that? Did you have help through therapy, or did it just dawn on you?
I did have a life coach, Betsy Capes, who is amazing, helped me through the whole time I was there. And she would help me with different techniques, like socially. I'd be like, oh, I'm feeling kind of lonely here because I'm here all the time and I know people, everyone's friendly, but also I feel lonely. And she's like, okay, what if we make a game plan? We're going to invite all the girls in the cast to a dinner. What night's the best night for everybody? I was like, Monday's pitch night. People aren't really like doing anything after. She's like, ask everyone to dinner Monday night. Like, she would like help me navigate a bit. And she also like works with people in the industry, so she like kind of gets it. So she helped me a lot. She helped me figure out how to talk to like the head writers, how to talk to Lorne sometimes. I would try to come in with a game plan and at least know what my side of the conversation was going to be. And I think having someone I could talk to about this, and I was in therapy too, but that was like more just me talking about my emotions, where the life coach is more about like, let's plan on how you're going to operate in this environment. And I think that was immensely helpful.
How did you find a good life coach?
She actually taught a class at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater where I did improv and sketch and stand up and kind of started my comedy journey. And she used to be, I want to say, an agent or a casting director. I can't remember, but she used to be in the biz and then was realizing that artists weren't utilizing some of the skills that they needed to like go farther than they were. Like, they had talent or they had the look or whatever, but they didn't have a good knowledge of time management or how to use their resources or their connections or whatever. So she created this class that was kind of like how to attain your goals with manageable bites, basically. And you kind of mapped out your goals in a year. Like, in a year, I would love to, I think mine were like audition for more national commercials, get an audition for SNL, finish this web series and something else. And then you go back in time and you're like, okay, so if I want to achieve that in 1 year, in 9 months, I need to have done these things. In 6 months, I need to have done these things. In 3 months, these things. And then you go week by week. And it could be as little as like, email this director that I know and see if he's available to talk about my web series, or research spaces where I can shoot this thing, or reach out to my commercial agents and tell them I'm willing to do more voice acting, or whatever the thing is. But just as opposed to being like, eventually I want to be on SNL, like really break down what are the steps to get there and how to achieve it. And then I remember the next year looking back at my list of goals that I wanted, and I had achieved all of them. I had auditioned for SNL. I don't know if I had made it that year. I auditioned a couple times. I was booking more commercials. I did finish my web series. And yeah, so I think I had gotten a lot from that class, to the point where I remember the last day we had to go around in a circle and say like what we got from the class. And it got to me, I was just sobbing because I was like, I got so much from this class and I don't know if I can do it on my own. Like, I was like scared to like leave the class, cause I was like, I loved the accountability of like having to like do homework and come every week with some work that I did. And I don't know if I can do that on my own, which I did, which is great. But then I was like, I still want some help. So I actually reached out to the teacher, who is also a life coach, and was like, will you help me? Just me?
Oh, nice.
And she helps lots of people, not just me. But I was like, will you help me outside of the class realm? And she was very, very, very helpful for many years. And yeah, I feel like I owe a lot to her.
I want to talk a little bit more about the stand-up and the special, which yeah, again, I really enjoyed, The First Woman. It sounds like you had done a lot of learning about your anxiety over the years. Is anxiety funny?
I think anything can be funny. Just depends on how you phrase it or what you're talking about specifically. And also, I guess it depends on who you're asking. I think to some people, anxiety is probably not funny. But Yeah, the fact that you can't control something that's happening to your body is a little funny. It's like you can lie to yourself as much as you want and be like, yeah, I got it, or like, it's cool, this doesn't affect me, but then your body's gonna be like, ding ding ding, like no, we do feel this way,
right?
Yeah, it is kind of funny that it's like, it's a reminder of how human we are, or how animal we are, or how, like, no matter how much thought or control we want our brains to have, we can't. It's not there.
Yeah. A lot of the special, you go to some very personal places and some very vulnerable places. How do you decide, like, looking back on just different anecdotes that have happened in your life, how do you decide which events of your life to turn into comedy? Like, how do you recognize where the funny is in things that have happened to you?
I think I just have a long list of things, like stories that have happened, things people have said to me, arguments I've been in, just like a long list of things in a folder on my phone. And I don't know if it's funny. Like, some things happen and I don't know what to do with it yet. Like, I had a car accident in college that was years and years ago, and I knew I wanted to talk about it in some way, but I didn't know what was funny about it yet. And it wasn't until the special where I actually was able to talk about it and link it to something else. And so, yeah, I think maybe just time and also an accumulation of other ideas helps me realize, oh, this thing might connect to this point that I'm trying to make, or this story connects to this story, and I can actually like turn it into this message or whatever. But I don't know if it's funny until I say it out loud. So I just kind of try things on stage, and if people are relating to it, then I kind of get an answer of like, okay, I think I'm going in the right direction.
So do you workshop things? Do you do stand up just knowing that you got to see what something amounts to?
I think there's a different process for each joke. Sometimes I'll go to my friends who are comedians and be like, do you think this is funny? Or like, do you think there's legs here? And they might be like, yeah, I think that's great. Or like, maybe workshop it a little bit more. And then I might just like tool around with it on stage. But I kind of have a good idea of what it is before I even hit the stage. Like, I try to like figure out why I'm even saying this thing before I get it to an audience. And then once I get in front of an audience, I try to pay attention to what they're responding to the most in the joke or in the story. Because sometimes I might tell a story where it's like, these details aren't important to the point I'm trying to make. Like, I'm like giving extra details that the audience doesn't care about, or they're like, that's interesting, but not funny. And then I'll like trim and adjust accordingly. But it's a symbiotic relationship between the audience and me, because they're getting entertained, but I'm also learning from them too. I'm also like getting information for like the future of this show.
I think of somebody who has dealt with anxiety going up and, you know, talking about very personal things in front of an audience. Does it make your anxiety better? Does it make it more manageable that you're doing, you know, that you can get up in front of strangers and share this stuff?
You know what's funny? I think I feel way more comfortable sharing anything or just talking in front of an audience than with one person. Like, I would much rather be in front of thousands of people on stage and sharing, yes, my deepest, darkest secrets than to meet one new person at a party and just like make small talk. I don't know how to explain it. I think that might be a performer thing or an artist thing. There's many people I know who are comedians who also have anxiety or are just shy or get anxious. And I don't know why that is, but yeah, I for some reason I've always been like very comfortable on stage in front of people, but not the other way around.
Right. Right. To mingle in the lobby afterwards is dreadful.
Yes. I feel like I've been a habitual late person. I'm getting way, way better. If anyone asks, tell them I'm very on time all the time. But but I think part of the reason I was late for so much of my life is because I was dreading the interaction I would have before a thing. Like if I had to like go to a meeting or an audition or a lunch or whatever, I just wanted to avoid the small talk or the awkward like getting in there with another person and interacting. I hated that. I'd rather be the last person there, so everything's already established and I just plug myself in, which like is a good strategy for me, but also doesn't look professional at all. So I changed it. But it's, yeah, I think eventually I was like, why am I so late all the time? Like, I know how to leave my house. Like, I know what to do to like leave and get to a place. But for some reason, I keep delaying myself. And I think that was part of it.
So are you more comfortable in this conversation because we're recording and it'll go out to listeners?
That's funny. Maybe I'm comfortable because we're on screens. I'm just in my own environment. And you are wherever you are. If we were in person, who knows how this would go?
Oh my God. There'd be drinks and snacks and it would just be, we wouldn't know what to do. I'd be looking at my shoes.
I'd be looking at the door. I'd be like, when are we out of here?
Right. One of us would fake an important emergency phone call that we had to deal with. Well, what's your plan for the anxiety going forward into the future? Is it something that you want to move past? Is it something that you're just going to be managing forever? Like, what's the perspective on it?
So far, I'm just working on management. I think if it gets worse, I will try to like see if I need like some sort of specific therapy or medicine or something like that. But so far, it is manageable. And I don't know if it's something I can move past. I have no idea. I'm not sure if I ever heard of anyone being like, I have no more anxiety. Yeah. Like, I'm done with that. Left that behind years ago. I think the goal is just to like experience it less, or at least to just acknowledge it when it happens. And so far, when I acknowledge it, it does make me feel better. Mm-hmm. So I think I just want to like stay on that train and hope that means that it's like getting easier to understand, as opposed to like questioning, what is this? Am I dying? What's happening?
Do you still get the heart irregularity?
Very little, every so often, but like immensely lower since I've acknowledged that it could be linked to my anxiety.
Okay. And how about the panic attacks?
I also haven't had a panic attack in a really long time, which makes me feel really good. Yeah, I feel like the last one I had that I can think of was like 2 years ago, which is nice. Yeah.
All right, knock on wood.
Yeah.
The special is called The First Woman. Sashir Zameda, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Sashir Zameda's stand-up special, The First Woman, debuts next month. Our show relies on donations from our listeners. With the donations, we continue to exist. Without them, we don't exist any longer. We like existing, and if you've already become a member, thank you. You are making the show possible. If you haven't become a member, don't worry. It's easy to do. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join, find a level that works for you, and then select Depression Mode from the list of shows. Be sure to check out maxfunstore.com. We have all sorts of Depression Mode merchandise, all sorts of I'm glad you're here merchandise happening over there. We got shirts and mugs and blankets and sweatpants, because what's Depresh without sweatpants? That's at maxfunstore.com. Be sure to hit subscribe, give us 5 stars, write rave reviews, helps get our show out into the world. The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available 24/7 for free in the United States by calling 988. The Crisis Text Line, also free and always available, text HOME to 741741. Our Instagram and Twitter are both at DepreshPod. If you're on Facebook, look up our mental health discussion group, Preshies. Our Depression Mode newsletter is on Substack, search that up. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at John Moe. Our electric mail address is depressionmode@maximumfun.org. Hi, credits listeners. I went to a baseball game last week. I like going to big baseball games because you can yell, "Come on!" in a big crowd without any explanation or apology. And I enjoy doing that. Depression Mode is made possible by your contributions. The show is produced by Gabe Mara. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Our production intern is Clara Flesher. And we get booking help from Mara Davis. Rhett Miller wrote and performed our theme song, Building Wings.
I'm always falling off of cliffs now, building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out, building wings, building wings, building wings. No one knows the reason, maybe there's no reason, I just keep believing. No one knows the answer, maybe there's no answer, I just keep on dancing.
Hello, this is Nath from Tacoma, Washington, and I'm glad you're here.
Depression Mode is a production of Maximum Fun and Papa Chick. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows.
Supported
directly
by you.